Okay, you're welcome back to the programme. Now, as you know, there is a documentary airing on TG Cahir tonight. There are some that don't want it to run. I understand some who even took part in it that thought it was going to be broadcast at a later date. And some family members of those who were bereaved during this awful tragedy have asked for this programme not to be broadcast because they think the timing is not right now. TG Cahir have defended the programme, as is their right, and as we speak right now, we understand it is still to be broadcast. Hugh Harper joins us on the programme again now. Hugh, thanks for joining us this morning. How are you, Hugh?
Good morning, Greg. That's a very good question we ask ourselves that every day. We're coping. We're surviving as probably the only way I can put it at the moment. There's a lot going on. The documentary included now, and it's very frustrating. With what we're not getting a chance to cope, to manage what we're going through. There's a lot of distractions, and this is one we could be doing without at the moment.
What is it about it, Hugh? I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I mean, obviously, it's before before we know the outcomes of the investigation. It's really quite soon. I mean, obviously, what people did in helping is to be celebrated, but I mean, this is still very right now for the likes of you, your family, and others. I presume, Hugh, are those your concerns?
There's multiple concerns, Greg. We wholeheartedly agree that the people that were there that day, the first responders, the medical crew, anybody who was there that day, this is a program that we understand is for them to document what they did, as opposed to inform the public exactly what happened, to what they did, not what happened in the explosion, but what they were doing that part on the day. The problem for us that, one, it's too early. We're still in the process of grieving. There's so many things that I could say, but at the moment it's just too early. And the second point is, Greg, that nobody has contacted us. And as far as I know, I can't speak for the rest of the families, but I can speak for us as a family. Nobody has contacted us to ask us, is this suitable? Nobody has contacted us to say that this is what's going to be said, this is what's going to be shown. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, this is a 9-part documentary. And I question, why 9 parts? Is this a documentary about, really and truly, is this a documentary about what the first responders did in Chrisley? Or is this about the nine families, as such, if you want to put it that way?
I'm not sure if I haven't heard it being a 9-parter. I wonder, is it a 9-parter on different subjects or what, Hugh? But it's certainly something that we need to get to the bottom of. Because, you see,
well,
at the end of the
day... Again, Greg,
yes, Hugh?
Again, this is just what I've been told and what I've been hearing from people that are telling us, what's happening. I've sent an email to TG4 begging them and asking them to make contact with all the families, to make contact with the superintendent, Derek Kenny, whoever is leading the investigation in this, and talk to people, let them know what's happening before this goes to air, so at least people can be ready, and they can either they can have their say to us, we don't feel that's appropriate, or we agree that's fine. The silence is deafening from the likes of TG4. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable. We feel so left out. It's like being on a bus journey and you're in the back of the bus and you have absolutely no say in where you're going. You're just along for the ride.
And what's one of the most regrettable things I think about this, Hugh, is because of the lack of communication is that there are then those that took part in this that thought it was something else according to them, or that it was going to be broadcast at a later date, and they themselves, even though some of them are heroes in this story, might have conflicts themselves, feeling that they're in some way adding to your pain, which is the very last thing that they would want to do. I think with all that considered, I think it would be nice if this was deferred, because, as I say, it's horrible to think that everyone who's on the same page might feel they're being in a little way pitched against each other by accident, clearly, by accident. But from what we know now, do you understand where I'm coming from?
I know exactly what you're saying, Greg. We have no issue with the we have no issue with the guys that were there that day. We know a couple of the people that were interviewed, and they've given us an idea of what was said. But the issue that we have is what we don't know. We don't know what video footage, for example, they've got. We don't know who the other people are that they've spoken to. We have absolutely no idea to the content. We've got to remember that there's other families here with children that are going to be watching this, other people that were affected by this, including ourselves, including our own two children. It's too early, and we need to be informed of what the content is.
You know, and it's starting to be even clearer for me now, Hugh, because you don't know if images of you or your partner at the scene are going to be shown. We don't know if footage that would have been shot that didn't make news bulletins at that time, because maybe, in inverted commas, it was too soon. Are we going to see that? Are the pictures of those pictures of the moments after the explosion are going to be shown? I understand really important that people directly affected by this and still absolutely locked in their grief would really need to know in advance.
Listen, we didn't get our little Luna back until the very end. It was 24 hours, but hours previous to that and minutes after the explosion, there was no guarding on the scene. There was no medical personnel, just the first responders. And I'm sure, and I'm not saying that they have, but I'm sure people have taken photographs. I'm sure people have taken a video. But it's what that video contains. I'm not ready to see it. And I'm sure that the families, members that have lost people, that found out very early on in that day in Chrysler. I'm sure that they're not ready to see it.
And I think what people...
And I'm sure...
Hugh, if you can work with me to sort of try and make people understand this, right? Because we've spoken in the past. In your everyday life, right? And I hope I'm not speaking out of turn here. In your everyday life, you might see something. It could be a wall that a car has hit and it's collapsed. That you, as a victim of this and having lost your beautiful daughter, even something like that can trigger very serious emotions. Just so the general public understand, when you talk about things that you might see and how it might affect you and others. Have I given an okay example there, Hugh, if you don't mind, so people understand that the images can come...
You have given a very good example, and I'll give another example, Greg, and it's something that I haven't looked at too much. God rest those people in Turkey. That earthquake, them images, albeit that it's far more extent and a far bigger situation in Turkey. But when I see that, when I see an ambulance of blue flashing lights, when my wife hears the buzzer on the car for the seatbelt not being on, there's just so much that we have to deal with at the minute, and we're trying to get through it as best we can, but there's so many distractions that we're not able to grieve properly. And this is just something that we would ask Tina G or TG4 to... I've written an email to them last night, because I only really found out exactly what this documentary was about. I honestly thought it was about the concert and the Royal Leisure Centre. And I've asked them to make contact with every individual family member, and I've asked them to make contact with the investigating team to see if they can, you know, highlight some information and correspond with everybody to let everybody know what's going on, because it is very early, but I'm more concerned about what's going to be aired. And possibly, I'm only thinking about possibly and thinking out loud, what damage this could do to any investigation that's going on with Chrysler, any outcome of any investigation. I am concerned about that, Greg, and I'm not going to hide behind any lies and say I'm not.
Hugh, can I ask you, seeing as you mentioned it, and I don't want to put you on the spot because it might not be easy to explain, because some people did message, and do you know, obviously the concert happened recently and there was that fantastic fundraiser last weekend.
Yeah, fantastic.
Is that different because... it wasn't talking about the event itself. It was an opportunity for people to come together or to fundraise. Is obviously those two events, for example, are very different to a TV program being made about this awful tragedy and its aftermath. Is that how you see it, Hugh?
Greg, sorry, could you repeat that question? Because I'm telling my phone is breaking up there. Sorry.
No, no. What I'm trying to say is, like, the concert and the great fundraiser last weekend are different to this, aren't they? Because they're fundraisers, they're an opportunity for people to come together. Whereas this is sort of. Is it easy to explain why it's different?
They're two completely different situations, Greg. I suppose, all in all, the concert and the truck and run is something that we were involved in. We knew what was going to happen. We were told it was going to happen. Mm. You know, we were invited to it. We had input to it to a certain extent. When you go to the concert, you're not, or the truck and run, you're not going to be looking. Nobody's going to be sharing photographs on a screen, putting videos up on a stage. You know, it's just completely different. As a chance for us. As families to meet whoever came, and a chance as families to meet the first responders, to thank them personally, to have a night with them, and to I suppose in a way to celebrate the ones we've lost.
Yeah, I get
you.
They were there with us
just as much as anybody else.
Well, you know, Hugh, as I said earlier on in the program, this is. It's all of our loss and all of our tragedy, but it's yours. It's you're the person bereaved, and it's your voice, I think, that really needs to be listened to in this type of situation. As I say, I don't know who's behind the program. I don't think anyone's making any comments about individuals or anything. It's just that this show, a lot of people, seemingly some who were involved and someone who are affected by this tragedy, feel that certainly before the outcome and the investigation. Or at least now, just is not the right time. And at the very least, the likes of yourself should have been informed as to what exactly is in it, in case you find yourself having to watch it, but find yourself further traumatised by it.
Well, I can assure you I won't be watching it, Greg. I will not be sitting down with a cup of tea and a biscuit to watch that show. I'm quite upset that myself and Donna and our two boys haven't been considered in the production of this, you know, in the making of it. We have talked to two of the people that have contributed. They're not the issue. That's not a problem for us. We support them fully. But it's the unknown for us. It's the unknown of what we walk into a shop after the documentary has been aired. We have no idea because we're not going to watch it. But we bump into a friend or a person that we know and they say, God, you know, that is a terrible thing to put on TV, or, you know, I didn't know that happened, or that, there's nobody ready for that yet, Greg.
Okay. Right, Hugh. Thanks for joining us to get your thoughts and views out on that.
Thank you very much. And thank you to Highland. They've been very supportive through the whole thing. Thank you very much.
Well, you know, we'll stand with you, Hugh, whenever. Okay, take care of yourself. Hugh Harper there. It's a toughie because, as I say, I'm not rounding on T.G. Cahir. I certainly am not. All the people behind it who are, you know, very highly respected and reputable. And I hope if they get wind of the type of conversation we're having, they understand that it's not that. It's just that people who are affected by it, at least some, we can't speak for all, and I'm not speaking for anyone, by the way, because we heard from Hugh there, are very uncomfortable because they weren't consulted. They don't know what's in it. They don't want it to go out now. And it is their loss and their tragedy. Right, following on from our conversation from Hugh, another family have been in touch to say that they feel very traumatised by the airing of this programme. No consultation was given to us, they say. We are barely holding ourselves together with so many questions and no answers. The documentary will throw us right back to that day. That's another family. Padraig O'Donnell, who took part in tonight's documentary, he says, in a communication with us, I support the family's call on this. I did take part in it and I thought families had an involvement in it. I only told my story on the events of what happened to me on the day. The families have a right to even view it before it airs. I can only assume it's done with the thoughts of the families in mind. And I want to think on Padraig as well too, by the way, because he and a couple of others probably are finding themselves in the middle of this, even though we heard from Hughes, there's no issues with anyone taking part in it. I think it's just a communications issue, and on a disaster of this scale, not just locally but nationally, I think the lack of communication has really led us to where we are today. And unfortunately, it's not pitching people against each other. That's not what's happening, but I'd just be thinking on people like Park and others who might feel they're stuck in the middle of it a little bit, even though they're not, and it's certainly not their intention. And Parig's an amazing person, and we all know that. Right, Nathalie joins us on the programme now. How are you getting on, Nathalie? How are you keeping?
Not too bad. Well, I'm a bit emotional, but well, considering. Yeah.
You're from Scotland. You're married to Sahan from Mardin in Turkey, and we're speaking in the context of this awful tragedy that's hit that part of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm finding it really emotional. We can't watch the news too much because just seeing children being brought out of the rubble, some of them alive, some of them dead, some of them with their dead parents lying beside them, it's awful.
Yeah, and there's a cycle in the media, and I'll be honest with you, it kind of makes me sick a little bit. I'm sorry to criticise the media, where they do the initial reporting, and then in subsequent days, it's the one-off stories of people's survival, which is great. But it sort of paints a picture in the general population's mind, which is not really real. You know, we still have thousands upon thousands of people missing. And I think these stories are designed, obviously, to sell papers, but almost to make people feel better. But we're not in that space. This is a terrible unfolding tragedy. And I think sometimes, I presume for yourself and your partner, it's even difficult when you're far removed from it because you're watching on. You're helpless, you're waiting for information. It must be particularly tough, is it?
And there's nothing you can do. And the mainstream media are only showing you cities and towns where they can access. They're not showing you the villages, and like the people in Syria aren't even getting that much help at the minute. I mean, there's people in villages that are hearing voices from underneath the rubble, and they can't access them because there's no one there to help. The government are going into these places. So we're raising money to try and get money directly to these. Like, there's the Kurdish Red Crescent that we want to donate to, and they'll try and help the people that are in these areas.
Yeah, because there's lots of connections between this part of the world, every part of the world really, and Turkey, particularly, and to a lesser extent Syria.
And then you've got Syrian families that are seeking asylum and are refugees because their country is war-torn. And like, these people are, you couldn't get any more rock bottom than what these people are going through right now. I mean, their homes were bombed, and now they're suffering earthquakes and stuff.
And because of the civil war, the rescue operation obviously is hindered. How are you raising funds? How can people support you, Nathalie?
Well, what we're doing is we're collecting money in the barbershop. Shahan's donating all of his tips. Money's the easiest thing to collect because it gets there quicker. We can do direct bank transfers. To post stuff over is a bit more difficult. It takes time. Do you know what I mean? It can take days, sometimes weeks, to get there, and there's a lot of stuff being sent over. But if we could get money to these charities, it would help. The White Helmet Charity is for the people in Syria. I think they need to get something. Because they're the only people in there doing anything at the minute.
Studio 47 is the barbershop in Letterkenny, isn't it? Where is it located for people who don't know but might want to drop off a donation?
We're at Killyleathan, Killyclug. We're just at the Killinor complex there.
And this is a drive up until February 17th, isn't that correct? Initially, at least.
It's 3 months. Turkey have declared a three-month disaster, so it can go on for as long as necessary, but we're aiming to send what we can on Friday.
Okay, so people can call in there, and if they want to track updates, Donegal Intercultural Platform are posting updates on this as well, aren't they?
Yes, yep.
Okay, right.
Yeah, and we'll update our page as well, and we'll let you know where the money's going, and
all right, listen, Nathalie, thank you, and pass on our good wishes to Sahan, of course, who's watching from afar, and I don't think we have to imagine, we can understand how difficult it is for him. Thank you.
Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. Catherine McDevitt is with us on the programme now. Catherine, I won't delay you long. Listeners will know that you very sadly lost your sister Martina in the explosion. And are you on to sort of support Hugh in his comments?
I am, Greg, and thank you very much for airing this. We're all very hurt. We very much echo what Hugh Harper has said. We share his same concerns. We also share the family waiting room with him in the hospital. Out of all the victims, I suppose we've had time with you and his wife, Donna. We were there first at the scene with Donna as well, while we waited as ambulances came out, waiting on our loved ones to come out that never did. We're so hurt, we're angry, we're annoyed. We knew nothing of this documentary till we received a text message last night at 6:30. And it sent us into, we're just spiraling again. We're being brought right back to that night. My mother's 82 years of age. You know, she never thought that her daughter would go before her, never mind now that she might have to see actually what happened. And again, you know, when this happened, Martina's funeral was streamed live on air. We were on the front cover of every newspaper as we grieved for our sister. Mm. We have tried so hard to privately grieve for our sister, but we've been given no opportunity. We've been given no time. We're all in counselling. We're trying to navigate this new life. We're trying to come to terms with what happened. Mm. And just this week, we're transported right back to so far back in our recovery.
It's
you can almost feel yourself standing again at the scene, numb with coldness. We stood there throughout the night. Mm. We are the family that the digger man is talking about. We stood all night as the cadaver dogs went to look for the bodies, as we seen rubble by rubble, piece by piece, getting taken away. We were not consulted. We knew nothing of this. We don't know how Martina died yet. We don't know why this accident happened. There's so many rumours. There's so many unanswered questions. We're not ready to see it. We did see it. We still see it every day. We see it every night in our dreams. We see it when we wake up in the morning. And for this to come out and be broadcast to the nation, and for us to have to go out again and face the public, and God, that was awful. You know, we're only just getting over sympathisers who, yes, they mean so well. I mean, for months we were doing our shopping out of town to avoid people. It's all been so public.
Yeah, I know, and I've spoken to people who were having something to eat or getting their hair cut or something, and someone paying for it. And whilst it's well intended, again, it kind of brings people back a little bit in the process. This only happened in October. It's just now. It's too soon for an entertainment program on it, even if it's well intended. Have you contacted T.G. Cahir, Catherine?
We sent him an email last night. We haven't had a response, so I contacted him myself by phone this morning, and the lady I spoke to said there was nobody available to talk to me at this time, and I said I'm Martina's sister.
Okay, Catherine, listen, I won't hold you any further because I don't want to add to anything, but I wanted you to have an opportunity to let maybe those who need to hear it to hear it, because it's your loss. We can't. It's you decide, not us, not the media, not T.G. Cahir, no one. It's yous. Catherine, best wishes to you,
and thank you, Greg.
The process for you as best can continues. We're thinking on yous all the time. Oh. You know that.
Okay, and thank you so much for airing this for the families this morning.
Okay,
it's nice to know that we have such great support.
No, we're back behind you 100%, Catherine. As is the wider community, Catherine. I hope you know everyone texting agreed, bar one message who says maybe people can tune on or not. We've had dozens and dozens of messages of people who back you. As if that's important, I just want you to know that.
Yeah, and it is so. Thank you.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. Right, okay. I live in Creasler. I don't want it aired. We're still very raw. God help the grieving family, says a listener another. I think the people of Donegal need to boycott this programme and don't even watch this. And also the sponsors of T.G. Cahir need to tell them not to show this programme. Pull the sponsorship. I just think if the right people hear it, they'll make the right decision. It doesn't have to go out, does it? Another, I think it's very insensitive to air a programme about the tragedy so soon after the event. What does it achieve? Hi, Greg. TG Cahar cannot air the Crease Loss show tonight. It's too soon, as Hugh said. It's only been 4 months since the tragedy. The family should have been and now need to be consulted. Do the right thing, TG4. Hey, Greg. Can you share a phone number we can call to try and stop this programme getting aired tonight? If lots of people bombard the station, surely they'll reconsider showing this documentary. I think really all it would take is one email from Catherine or one email or telephone call from Hugh. I understand where you're coming from. I'm not sure what it would achieve us bombarding them. I don't have a number for them, by the way. But listen, come here. These are the people that are going through it now. It's their voice that needs to be amplified and heard. And I hope they do hear it and do the right thing.
Business Matters, in association with ATU Donegal's Faculty of Business. If you're an owner or manager in a food production business, consider the new one-year Level 8 Higher Diploma in Food Business and Product Innovation. It's just one three-hour lecture weekly. Call 918-6600 or email gary.mcgill@atu.ie.
Rightio, Wednesday means the latest Business Matters podcast from Highland Radio is out and live for you right now on our website. Its presenter is Kieran O'Donnell, and he is right in studio with us because we get to have a look forward through as to what's coming up in the podcast, but also get a bit of business news from you. How are you, Kieran?
Good, Greg. How are you?
Great, and it's great to have you back in with us. Right, okay. I love when newspapers confirm what we already know.
Yes. The Guardian newspaper has named Rathmullen as being one of Ireland's top 10 most charming villages, and in the very complimentary write-up, it said the village is the gateway to the beautiful east coast of the Fanna Peninsula, one of the most northerly points in Ireland and home to some of its finest beaches along Ballymastocker Bay and the rigid mountains, offering spellbinding views across valleys, lakes and coast. So that's a very good thumbs up from a very reputable paper across the water.
And so, these things all make a difference.
Yep.
So it's always good to get some good PR. And good for Rathmullen to be put on the map. Okay. Right, we're expecting to see more job opportunities in the county?
Yes, the number of job opportunities in Donegal will grow by 5% in the coming year, and that is according to a new forecast from FRS Recruitment. That is one of the country's leading recruitment agencies. So this follows on from the 4% decrease experienced in Donegal in 2022. And just looking at the national picture, Greg, the largest decreases came in Kerry, 10%, Leitrim down 9%, and Louth down 7%. So we seem to be bucking the trend there, thankfully.
Yeah, hopefully yeah. That we get through the worst of this now and people can start seeing the woods for the trees, a bit of light at the end of the tunnel. Great news from Funthrough. They have a base in Outer County too,
aren't they? Financial services company Funthrough is to create 300 new jobs in Derry, and the new roles will see Funthrough's northwest operation double in size. The Financial Times had named Funthrough, established 10 years ago, as one of Europe's fastest growing companies for 2 years in succession. And last July, of course, the company announced the establishment of a European delivery centre at Letterkenny and the creation of 300 jobs over the next 5 years.
Yeah, so hopefully now they keep the pedal to the metal and they all come to fruition. Yeah.
But they certainly expanded their operation in the northwest considerably over the last while, and it's obviously they're a company that's going to be here for the future.
All right, what's this Northwest in the City event all about?
Yeah, I mentioned it a few weeks ago, Greg. It's part of Donegal County Council's focus on attracting talent back to Donegal and the Northwest. So its Economic Development Unit is partnering with national agencies, local authorities and stakeholders for the Northwest in the City event, and that is taking place in the Westbury Hotel in Dublin tomorrow, Thursday. More than 20 global multinationals and leading Irish companies are expected to attend the event, and those will include Optum, TCS and Funthrough, who are all based in the Northwest.
All right, good stuff. Right, we've had Fiverr Fridays before in the past. This is a free Friday. What's going on?
Just a wee note. For the month of February, Greg, there's an option for people to work at Craven Centre's Co-Work Plus Hub for free on Fridays. So to book a desk at the Termit facility, visit connecthubs.ie. And we had Mary Doherty on the programme last year out in the Craven Centre. So it's a good facility. And obviously, if people are in the area, they might actually be from there, but base themselves here in the Northwest, that's an option for to go and get a desk and work for free for a Friday.
Where is the time going? Because it is free for February, but it seems like we're almost halfway through February. Yeah. Is it an age thing? I know it's not a business matters thing, but seeing as you, you know...
Well, I can't comment, Greg, because I'm much younger than you, but I'll take your word for it.
It's all ahead of you, young man. It's all ahead of you. But time just does seem to be marching on, doesn't it? Like, it's lovely to see these stretches in the evenings. You know, you're seeing light after five and all.
Yeah,
that
even
kind
bright,
of stuff,
bright early this morning too, which is good, you know.
Who told you that?
Somebody phoned me and told me.
You must have saw a picture on Facebook, did you? Right, okay. Let's get down to business. This week's podcast, Kieran.
Yeah, my guest this week, Greg, is the head of Regions Property and Enterprise Development with the IDA, Dennis Curran. Established in 1949, the IDA is the state agency responsible for promoting Ireland for foreign direct investment. IDA currently employs 330 people throughout its 22 overseas offices and 10 regional offices. A native of Letterkenny, Dennis has been with the IDA for 24 years. So, Greg, in this clip, Dennis explains that the North West region has been experiencing a high level of investment in recent years.
When we're positioning Ireland and the geography of Ireland to potential investors, we position it on a regional basis. We don't necessarily position it on a county basis. So we market Donegal as part of the Northwest region, and the Northwest region encompasses Donegal, Sligo, and Leitrim, and you know, we've had a very good run of investment in Donegal and in the Northwest over the last 2 years. So today, Kieran, we have 21 companies, FDI companies, IDA client companies, located in Donegal, and combined they employ directly just over 3,600 people. And I was just looking at some of the numbers, compared to maybe 8-9 years ago. The number of people employed now in Donegal in foreign direct investment has increased by 52% over the last 8 or 9 years.
It's interesting headline figures. We look forward to listening to you dig into that a bit more with Dennis. What's the range of the conversation there, Kieran?
Yeah, I suppose, look, the one thing I took from the conversation, Greg, was the specific role that the IDA has. I suppose its main function is to sort of one for Ireland, first of all, and then it's to one for the region. And I suppose things that potential investors or global companies take into consideration when they decide to move to a certain country or a certain location would be common jurisdiction, EU membership, political stability and political predictability, and talent for the future. So there are a lot of things that are considered, and it takes a lot of time, I suppose, for negotiations from the time that they open until they conclude. But when the IDA are successful for securing the location and the setting up of a new business, the knock-on effect economically and socially for a region or for the area, for the town, are hugely positive.
Yeah, and they have to make sure now too, don't they? And I think we're getting better at it, that we don't have businesses that come in, see what benefits there are, and then exits.
Yeah, the one thing Dennis would have noted, he said, look, when a company does come here, it's not for a 12-month period, it's for 10 years or multiple 10-year periods.
Okay. The full interview with Dennis Curran, a big hitter, has to be said, is available to download now at highlandradio.com or wherever you get your podcast. Now you stream it on the website if you wish as well. And Business Matters goes out on air, Kieran?
Yeah, after the 6 o'clock news, Greg, on Sunday evening.
And anyone looking to get in touch with you to give some feedback or suggestions for the show?
Yeah, just drop me an email, please. businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
All right, Kieran, listen, looking forward to seeing you next Wednesday already. Thank you so much.
Cheers, Greg. Good morning.
As always. All right, Kieran O'Donnell there. Brendan O'Donnell is Senior Engineer with Capital Delivery Unit, Community Development and Planning Directorate. So we're talking about the Riverine project, which will not be completed within the time frame which was laid down. And it's unlikely to be resolved before the peaceful programme ends. Brendan, this seems on the face of it just a disappointment. Is that your assessment of it?
No, absolutely, Greg. A huge disappointment for ourselves and the project team, but as well for the wider community that would have benefited from. So it is hugely disappointing. We've been beset, I suppose, with challenges on the project for some time, but not unusual for large projects. But just look, it's got to the stage where we're up against a hard deadline with the Peace 4 funding, the EU funding, end of 23, and that just cannot be moved. So that's really where the difficulty lies.
So what happened here, Brendan, in layman's terms?
Yeah, in layman's terms, I suppose the statutory approvals, Greg, were quite, onerous or difficult. And that's, given that we're crossing the River Foyle, it's an EU protected habitat, if you like, and also a floodplain there. We have OPW links there. And because it's a cross-border project, there's statutory approvals on both sides of the border to complete. And they're quite onerous, as I say, just because we're dealing with a European site. And I suppose that we also, as well know, the issues with Bord Pleanála and I suppose with staffing issues there and governance, the board itself, there's difficulty with some staffing and getting people appointed to that.
And pardon my naivety, and we don't want to circumvent anything or do anything that we shouldn't be doing. Is there any possibility that the powers that be could intervene in some way to make this happen in the time frame that would be required now?
Yeah, I think at this stage, Greg, we're beyond the time frame, but listen, we have been liaising with Bord Pleanála at official level, if you like, and fairness to the staff there in the board, they've been doing their best as well. The difficulty arises is in the decision-making of the board. They're an independent body, as you know, so they can't really have that interference from outside telling them what to be doing. So it's around, I guess, Bord Pleanála having the resources or the setup in place that they can make the decisions.
Yeah.
And I don't think we're even there yet.
And the project promised a park of regional significance located along the banks of the River Foyle on both sides, comprising of a number of elements, including outdoor events, space, managed parkland, enhanced river access, environmental area, an adventure play area, community building, and all the infrastructure that you'd expect from it. A real actual game changer project, because they're not an awful lot of them are, but this would have been a game changer project. So what does this mean then to its long term future? We're not going to get these issues resolved before the Peace 4 program ends. Is there, again, pardon my ignorance, is there a Peace 5 program? Is there other funding streams that can be tapped into? What does this mean to the long-term, medium to long-term future of this project, Brendan?
Yeah, I suppose, look, Greg, we intend to finish off the statutory procedures to get that. So we will stay with it till we get the Bord Pleanála decision. We have a number we have a foreshore license as well needed for the bridge connecting the two sides of the river, the parks. We have a marine license in Northern Ireland that we need to get as well, and planning permission from Derry City Strabane. Those, I think, the Northern Ireland applications, statutory approvals, they're in hand. We're confident they'll be delivered. So we get the statutory approvals in place. That'll bring the project to a shovel-ready status, if you like. It'll become a very different thing, much more certain than for deliverability. So the Peace Plus is the next iteration, if you like, or the next incarnation of the funding programme under Peace. So Peace Plus is an option for funding. There are probably other options as well. We might look towards something, perhaps in a shared island fund. But what we intend to do, the commitment remains between both councils, and indeed SEUPB have reiterated their commitment as well to the project. Now, obviously, they don't have the final say on these things. But I think that there's a lot of goodwill. There's a lot of commitment remaining there for the project. So we'll look to move the project on through whatever funding mechanism we can identify.
As you say, once you get that to shovel-ready status, we can maybe start to see those options. Listen, thanks for your time, Brendan, this morning. I appreciate it. Disappointing for you and the team and the community, of course, but hopefully this will come to pass. All right, that's Brendan O'Donnell there. And that's where we have to leave it on the show today. Thank you so much to all of you who listened to the show, got involved in the conversation. It's challenging at times, isn't it, with some of the stuff we have to talk about, but it's important that we do. We appreciate your involvement. Anything you got in touch with us, we'll continue to try and chase up and deliver for you, as we try to do here on the programme. But for now, for me, Greg Hughes, Caroline Orr, the researcher and the producer, we're back with you tomorrow morning at 9. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday.